Not all monsters come from the stars. Some stalk the woods on two legs and vanish without a trace into our forests. In the heart of North Carolina, nestled within the wild, tangled expanse of the Uari Mountains, something has been stalking hikers, stirring fear, and leaving behind more questions than answers. When a chilling encounter on Morris Mountain is reported to Jesse and Joe Doyle of Hellbent Holler, the search begins. Armed with tech, grit, and no backup, what they uncover is captured in a harrowing new documentary from Small Town Monsters, one that takes us into the dark like never before. It releases on the Small Town Monsters YouTube platform on August 10th. Tonight, Jesse Doyle joins us to share what happened when curiosity meant something primal. This isn't just about tracking Bigfoot. It's about survival. This is the Monster on Morris Mountain, and you're listening to the Paranormal 360.
In the spring of 2025, a video surfaced out of nowhere. That single video launched a relentless two-month investigation into one of the most mysterious forests in America.
There's something out here, and it's not human. This is so crazy, isn't it?
What we found was a monster.
Fascinating. The documentary again comes out on August 10th on the Small Town Monsters YouTube channel. Joining me now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Jesse Doyle, filmmaker, experiencer, and researcher. Jesse, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
All right. This looks exciting, creepy. I'm glad you're out doing it at the nighttime, not me, because again, I talked to so many different Bigfooters from many different walks of life, and I love the fact that you guys are pretty upfront. This is weird, creepy. It's got its moments, and to hear those howls. Now, is that just added for special effect, or is that some of the actual howls you caught?
So the howls featured in that trailer that you just played, those are actually the howls that are in a video that were sent to us that actually kicked off this entire investigation. There's a hiker that is in the Uari National Forest all the time, and he was out off trail like he always is, and he started hearing these insane screams in the distance, and he had the presence of mind, thank goodness, to pull out his phone and actually start recording them. And my friend, who is a ultralight hiker out there and friends with this gentleman, sent these to me immediately. And that kicked off this whole thing. So after receiving those howls, we packed everything up. And literally the next day, we were on the road up to the Uari National Forest. And it rolled into a multi-month investigation that culminated with us capturing our own screams in the night.
Oh man. Now I'm not an outdoors guy. I'm an avid indoorsman, as my listeners know. But it has a very wolf or coyote like sound to it. Have you taken it to like an animal linguist, a zoologist, to see if that howl makes sense, what it could be?
We have actually run it through a few programs. We've talked to some wildlife biologists. Nobody can really pinpoint what it is. It's not a known animal to their knowledge at this point. So it's sort of a mystery right now. But I know that we jumped to conclusions on what it could be because we've not had a Class A sighting at this point. We've not seen a Sasquatch right in front of us making these noises. So we can't say with 100% certainty that this is Sasquatch. He wasn't on the trail yelling in front of us. But everybody I've taken these sounds to and sent them to over and over and over, nobody can really pinpoint what they are. These sounds, as well as the sounds we captured in our subsequent investigation.
All right. Now, again, you hear these kind of noises coming from the woods. That sounds menacing and filling. Is there ever recordings where you hear one like in the distance in front of you making that howl and then one behind you. I mean, has there been footage of that or audio of that recorded anywhere that you're familiar with? Like they're surrounding people and you can hear them from multiple angles.
So we've experienced that and we really had some difficulties capturing the audio. It was such a stroke of luck that our hiker actually just captured it with a cell phone. But this creature was close enough to him that he could actually capture that insane sample that he got. When we went up to the Uwaris, we actually camped in a campsite that was occupied many years ago by a man named Mike Green. He was a famous off-the-wall ex-Special Forces Bigfoot researcher who was absolutely obsessed with the Uwari Bigfoot. So we actually went to where he camped out to basically use it as a base camp. But every night that we were out there, we would hear these sounds and we just could not capture them. And we would hear them in multiple locations all around us. And we really had some difficulty capturing that. So through the course of the months, we actually developed a device called the Super Sound Stick, which is a high sensitivity microphone and a 32-bit float recorder. And then I had monitoring headphones and we mounted that all on a monopod. And I was able to actually get high quality audio and move it around and follow the sounds and follow the movement of this creature. And that's how we actually got that insane audio that we present to you guys at the end of the film.
Have you ever asked to take it into like a zoo at night and play it for other animals to see how they react to that sound?
That's a novel idea. I like that idea. We've been trying to get gorilla pee from a zoo for a long time just to see if we could use it as a lure to get some Sasquatch activity. So I don't think the zoos like us very much. But that is a cool idea to maybe play those sounds and see if there's any kind of reaction. Or if there's a reaction from an animal that might be native to the Sasquatch's region. You know, you wouldn't play it maybe for a tiger, but maybe something like a black bear or deer or something like that that would maybe have some sort of inherent reaction to it, some, you know, learned instinct that they need to avoid whatever this is.
Yeah, that would be worth a try, especially, and maybe that'd even be good to go. There seems to be nature centers in every city and town, right? Going into somewhere out there to play it to the animals that they have at a nature center. I would guess that would be important for those people too. See how the animals react to these type of things. And what does that tell us? If nothing, do they just ignore it? Like it means nothing. Are they responding in an ultrasound kind of way that we are recording it? We're hearing it, but maybe it's not meant for other creatures. It's meant to be a deterrent for us.
Right. I'm all about experimentation. So I'm always interested in approaching this research and this work in a novel way. Everything we do is non-traditional. We take it from a non-traditional perspective and we analyze our data in a non-traditional way. We are very, very high tech with what we do. We go into these areas. We go deep into these areas. We try to provoke some kind of response. And that's very, very non-traditional for the Bigfoot field. So I'm definitely interested in experimenting with something like that just to get the data.
I want to talk about that when we return. Obviously, everybody's got a different take on it. Everybody is very protective of how it should be done, how it shouldn't be done. Provocation in the paranormal field is you know, highly frowned upon, yet there are others who do provocation to great result, and they get responses and answers that help them further their research. And again, I guess it kind of depends on the omelet you're cooking, how much of the egg you need to crack, right? And I want to find out what that's been like for you. Has there been much pushback from the Bigfoot environment, from the researchers out there? We'll talk more about that right after this.
Have you ever felt like something or someone was trying to tell you something? That inner nudge, that quiet whisper from the universe, with intuition sharpened by years of spiritual connection, and a deep-rooted gift. Winnie Schrader delivers readings that are compassionate, insightful, and shockingly accurate. Whether you're facing a crossroads healing from heartache, or just curious what the cards reveal Winnie creates a safe. Sacred space to explore your journey. This isn't fortune cookie fluff. This is honest, intuitive guidance from someone who's helped hundreds find clarity, closure, and confidence. If you've been waiting for a sign, this is it. Book your session now at lovelotustarot.com and take control of your journey. That's lovelotustarot.com. Winnie's sessions are personal, powerful, and often life-changing. That's lovelotustarot.com.
The Monster on Morris Mountain is the name of the documentary. It'll be out on August 10th on the Small Monsters, their Small Town Monsters YouTube page. Boy, it's a lot of words to try to say, and words are tough. Words are very, very hard, Jesse. Going out there trying to experiment and explore this field, I think it's funny because there are so many people that have drawn a line in the sand, and yet they've never had an experience. How is it that then we should just poo-poo the idea of other people going out and trying to push those boundaries so that we can have a more profound experience? Do you run into a lot of combative nature from fellow explorers because of the way that you are examining the field and maybe not following the edicts set forth by primatologists or other science-aligned investigators?
How can you draw a line in the sand when you've never set foot on the beach? So I like to go out in the woods and
hang on. I'm writing that on my arm. I want to make that a tattoo.
There you go. I just go out there and look for this. I don't have a background in science. I don't have a background in primatology or anything like that. But that doesn't make my experiences and my work any less valid. I spend a lot of time in the woods, and my goal is to capture evidence of the existence of these creatures and paranormal phenomenon in the woods. It's not just limited to Bigfoot or Dogman or anything like that. I'm cross spectrum with what I look for. And a lot of the time, everything seems like it crosses realms and crosses paths. You know, you have a lot of reports of Bigfoot activity along with UFO activity and everything. So it's all kind of one cohesive thing in a way. So I always look for everything, keep an open mind about it. I think that a lot of the pushback comes from there's this dividing line between the woo and the apers. But I think as we move along and more groups like Hellbent Holler come out and show you that it's not one or the other, that it's a combination of many things, that we just have these small little pieces of a puzzle that we don't even know how big the puzzle is yet. And I don't think we'll ever know. And I think that it's a terrible thing that people are so full of pride and just so that, you know, that they can think that they know everything and that their way is the way it must be done. We don't know anything. And I think humbling yourself to the point that you admitting that you know nothing is the first step in the journey to really learning everything.
I like it. So let's talk about this story. Obviously, you get this call, this message of something going on out there. Do you take these initial things with a grain of salt, even when they come with really compelling audio evidence? Do you jump on the bandwagon right away? This is it. We're going to go get this one. Or how do you broach the subject of how you're going to move forward and what cases are worthy of investigating?
One good thing about us is we're really, really familiar with tech and we use it all the time. So if somebody sends us a thermal video, my first question is, what device did you use to record this? Because I probably own it. And if the footage looks like, there's a difference between what it should look like, because I use this device all the time, versus what it does look like, that's a red flag there. Also, I've, through the course of doing this, I do all of the editing and sound engineering and everything for my channel. So I've had to teach myself sound engineering. So I can actually do a little work with audio samples and I can determine is this something that has been faked? You can look at the different frequencies, you put it on a spectrogram, and you can determine if it's a human vocalization or a known animal species vocalization just by looking at a sound sample on a spectrogram. So that's something that we'll do too, is really kind of dig into it. A lot of these hoaxers are not very, they're not very advanced in their methods. So we just use our knowledge that we have and the knowledge that we've gained over the years doing this to kind of put it through those tests. Now, this particular piece of evidence was sent to me by a trusted friend of mine who is an ultralight hiker, and he was also featured in the film. His name is Mike Kirkpatrick, MK. He was featured in the film. He's an Afghanistan war veteran and ultralight hiker in the Uwari area. He's been up and down the AT several times, and he was basically our field producer for this documentary. He sent this to me directly, and that really kicked off this entire journey into the Uwaris and looking into the possibility of Bigfoot being out there. So you have to consider the source. Consider who sends you this to begin with. If it's a random person off of Facebook, you need to put it through a little more scrutiny than if it's a trusted friend who knows what slings and arrows you've gone through in the past just doing Bigfoot research out the gate.
You know, it'd be interesting to take all of the known and reported Bigfoot audio, feed it through AI, and ask AI, do you hear cohesive language? Do you hear call and response? Do you hear things from these different areas? And, you know, you've got some that are coming from Washington State. You've got some that are coming from the Carolinas, some from Georgia, some from Illinois. Is there anything that they're saying the same thing? They're acting the same way. We know whale talk does. We can track that. It would be interesting to see, and I don't know if you're familiar, has anybody really started to track that using AI to understand? And then maybe even if we're seeing some commonalities, have AI create what it believed would be a response that we could play back in the woods to see if they're willing to come out.
We've had people suggest that we take some of these audio recordings that we capture and then amplify them and then call blast them back out. That's a great idea. I think we're going to experiment some with that. But one interesting
thing. What if the call, Jesse, is,
hey, hide everybody. Those idiot humans are back.
And all you're doing is blasting that back into the woods, right?
I guess we come back the next time and see if we get any better results. That's the whole thing with experimenting. You got to try. Right. One thing I've noticed about doing my research, I'm mainly focused in the Southern Appalachian region, and there's a lot of differences between Sasquatch reports in the Pacific Northwest versus the Appalachian region. The howls that we've captured in this documentary are more akin to the Ohio howl, which is, again, a part of that Southern Appalachian corridor. It seems like you said, that perhaps their language may be similar, but the howls are completely different. And the physical descriptions of Sasquatch in the Pacific Northwest versus the Appalachian Sasquatch, they're very different as well. So you might be looking at two divergent species of something that was very similar at one point in time, but now it's completely different and they probably wouldn't be able to even communicate. I think it was, 6 million years, well, maybe longer than that, that woolly mammoths and elephants diverted at one point. That doesn't mean, that doesn't mean they're the same thing at that point. So you have to think, did these two branch off at some point in time, and it's Pacific Northwest and then the Appalachian Sasquatch now, and could they communicate? I think that's a little further down the line from what we're doing now, but it's an interesting thought exercise.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, what is the inherent threat of going out into the wilderness, seeking something that you don't know what size it is? You don't know how aggressive it might be. You don't know what its agenda is. Jesse Doyle is our guest this evening as we are discussing the new documentary. Again, it'll be out on August 10th. We have a link for that and for Jesse's website on today's program guide. Stay tuned. There'll be more to talk about right here on the Paranormal 360. Hi, this is Dave Schrader, avid indoorsman, here to talk to you about staying safe and not facing Bigfoot. Listen, I've got this part of me, Jesse, that wants to go out there. I want to put myself out there because I love having weird experiences. But I've asked many Bigfoot enthusiasts, I'll call them, because hunter is the wrong term. They're not going out to kill these things. What is your plan if you run into one, right? What do you do if you're hearing the howls and you go charging into the woods and you round the corner and there's this 9 or 10 foot tall creature howling at you? Do you just drop to the ground like you would if a bear was attacking? Do you stand your ground? Do you get out your fishnet and try to capture it? What's your plan?
I think the first thing I would do is probably utter a few words that are not radio friendly. but that's the thing, is I've been doing this for years. I've been out in the woods. I'm deep in the woods looking for these. I am actually going for it. I hear something crazy, I go after it. That's something that I tend to do without even thinking. And that's not a great plan, obviously. And I've prepared myself mentally as much as I can for that Class A sighting. But I honestly think, I don't think I'd be able to process it very well. I think I'm going to have an adrenaline dump, get terrified. I just hope that I can get footage of it above all. Now, when we go into the woods, we are armed. There's a lot more threatening things out there in addition to Sasquatch. You've got bears, you've got humans, which are a huge threat in a lot of the areas we go into. We go into some pretty remote areas in rural Appalachia, and it is very, very dangerous. The human element is a huge danger out there. So we are both armed when we're out there, no exceptions whatsoever. But here's the thing. If you believe that there is a 7 or 8 foot tall creature out there that has possibly taken people before that is giant, an omnivore or carnivore, why would you not go out there armed? If you have any sense of self-preservation, you're going to go out there armed. I'm not out there seeking to kill one of these things or hunt one of these things down. All I want is the footage. That's all I'm interested in getting. So if I end up ripped apart in the woods, make sure you guys come out there and see if you can find those SD cards, because that's my entire goal here is just all get right. the footage.
I guess that's a good way. If you're going to go out, have that on the gravestone, torn apart by Bigfoot.
I'll take it. I'll absolutely take it.
Is it aggressive, this creature? Do you believe there is an inherent danger? Some look at it as just this guardian of the woods, and its sole purpose is to exist and just coexist as it has for maybe centuries or millennia. Or do you think that there is a more territorial, aggressive nature that they will kill or do severe damage if you get in their way?
It seems like encounters in Appalachia are more aggressive. It seems like human encroachment is more intimate in the Southern Appalachian region, as opposed to, say, the Pacific Northwest. Bigfoot in the Pacific Northwest has become sort of an icon of environmentalism, a forest brother, that kind of thing. In the Appalachian region, it's something to be wary of. It's something to fear. The old timers used to call them boogers, or it was a derivative of the boogeyman. It was something that you stayed away from at night. It was something the old women would warn you against. You needed to come. My grandmother used to say, come in the house before the woolly boogers get you. It wasn't, you're going to go out there into the woods and play with our Bigfoot friends. It was, you need to stay away from these people, stay out of the woods at night because these things will get you. So I think that folklore there kind of tells us everything we need to know, that these are not forest brothers. This is something to fear. This is something that is a primal danger to us as humans. And that's why we have that longstanding folklore. It goes back to the Cherokee. They warned their people about these things, that they were a danger. They didn't have your best interest at heart. Even though it's been gentrified to the point that you have Bigfoot plushes that are very cute, it's the same thing as with, you know, the Disneyfication of any wildlife species of any kind. People go to these national parks and they ask Mr. Cougar to stop eating Mr. Bear. That's just delusion, you know? And you have to kind of look at this from a real standpoint, that our ancestors have feared these things for a long time, and there's a real reason for that.
Have you personally, especially in filming this documentary and going out there, have you had your holy beep minute?
During the filming of this documentary, we were doing a stakeout, and it's actually when we captured the insane audio that we got. We're there, we're at the campsite, we're staked out, and something gets thrown. Something huge gets thrown. I included this in the film as well. It scared me. I jumped up like in a slow manner. I was having such an adrenaline dump. I couldn't even move in a quick way, but I got up, you know, very stiffly, and was like, oh my God, because something had been thrown from the woods at us. And when you see the documentary, you'll hear it and you'll see my reaction to it. It is a huge clatter. Something very large was thrown at us. And that was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. Another oh moment that we've had is encountering the amount of copperheads and rattlesnakes that are in the Uwari National Forest. There was one point where a 6-foot rattlesnake went by my feet in the middle of the night, and I am armed only with a flashlight, and I'm trying to use an EMF reader, and I'm like, oh my God. So there's a lot of danger out there, and you have those moments, but it's inherent with going out into the woods in the middle of the night, hunting down creatures that aren't supposed to exist. It's supposed to be dangerous. That's part of it. It's if it was easy, then we'd already have one by now.
Well, you just heard a perfect example of why Dave is not thrilled with going out there to have this kind of experience. Maybe at some point, I just need some like leather hip waders. And with my luck, they'd be hanging in the trees and fall into my hip waders. So, you know, I mean, even that doesn't seem like the greatest plan for me. What would you say in the years of exploration, and it doesn't necessarily have to be even in this documentary, but what has been the best proof to you that this creature, the wild man, the woolly booger, the Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, Skookum, that they exist?
Up until this point, I would say listening to some of the encounters people have had. The only thing we've found out in the woods in terms of, you know, evidence towards Bigfoot is There's prints, there's structures, but this is all so passive and it's left behind. It's not an active piece of evidence. I think the biggest piece of evidence is actually in this documentary. It is the audio that we captured while we were out there. We're actively looking for Sasquatch. We're having these experiences and we were able to actually record them. And it happens over and over and over. It gets to a point where I'm like, I can't keep getting all of these audio samples because it's so many yells in the distance. And whatever this creature is, it is moving around us and I'm following it with my audio recording device the entire time. But it's just letting out these bestial guttural howls the entire time. And up until this point, I had some doubt. Of course, you know, I have to keep a skeptical mind and keep my wits about me when I'm doing this. Not everything can be Bigfoot, or you drive yourself crazy doing this. You go into these spirals of madness that everything is Bigfoot, and then nothing is Bigfoot at that point, you know? So you have to have a level of skepticism to you. But as soon as I started hearing these howls, I felt them. I felt them in my body. I heard them. I recorded them. I experienced them. I know that that's not a person. I know that's not a known animal. And I just, it was a moment of shock for me, honestly. I was like, oh my God, this is real. This is real. Even though I've been looking for this for years, you have that moment where it shakes you to your core and you say, oh my God, it's all real.
It is all real. There are just too many people that have had these encounters and seen things, from state workers to law enforcement to everyday Joes and Janes, that have come across these beings. Something is coexisting with us, something that is beyond our ken of understanding. Doesn't mean that because it sounds so fantastical, it can't possibly exist. Remember, there are other animals that have been discovered that were legendary for a long time until they weren't. We'll come back. We've got more to discuss with our guest, Jesse Doyle, right here on the Paranormal 360.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Bigfoot. And boy, do I have something to tell you. So there I was, deep in the forest, minding my own business, snacking on berries, avoiding tourists, and trying to stream the live video of the Paranormal 60 podcast. Notice I said trying. But thanks to my old cell carrier, no signal, or slow and spotty at best. And worst of all, the astronomical bills. Now, I might be a magical beast, but I still got a budget. That's when I stomped my way over to Mint Mobile. Man, that Ryan Reynolds is dreamy. And Mint Mobile plans were starting at just $15 a month. Mint Mobile gives you premium wireless service on the nation's largest 5G network. Yep, even works here in the woods. Don't ask how. I know nothing of your human sorcery or satellites. Either way, now I can FaceTime the Chupacabra with zero lag. You ever try explaining roaming fees to a Wendigo? It doesn't end well. Mint Mobile lets you keep your own phone, your own number, and all your contacts, so I didn't even lose Mothman's digits. Plus, no cryptic contracts or shady surprise charges. I use Mint Mobile, and if you've seen my footprint, you know I don't make small decisions. So listen, humans. This summer, skip breaking the bank, and you're back hauling in another overpriced bill. Head on over to mintmobile.com/P60 and start saving like a legend. That's mintmobile.com/P60. There's a link for it in today's program guide. Oh, and here's the legalese. Upfront payment of $45 for just 3-month 5-gigabyte plan required, which is equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for the first 3 months only. Then, full price plan options are available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
Welcome back to the program. Jesse Doyle, our guest this evening. I don't know why it's so hard for you guys to find Bigfoot. I found him and he was able to do the Mint Mobile ad for me.
You got to give us his digits. You know his agent?
I know things. Very cool. Let's chat a little bit more about this. You've got the documentary. It's going to be out August 10th again on the Small Town Monsters YouTube.
Correct.
Also, with your website, you'll have more information and updates. You continue to go out and explore and witness things. Now, I know up in the Appalachian area, there are many different stories. Do you find that there's any correlation to these strange lights that appear and Bigfoot sightings?
Absolutely. So a lot of encounters include those lights. Now, you can call them orbs, you can call them witch lights, you can call them spook lights. Those are all terms that are used in this area. But that is something that is seen alongside Bigfoot, and it's been that way for a very long time. We've actually experienced that when we've been out. We found a perfect, and I do mean a perfect, perfect Bigfoot print. It was shocking. We were actually about to quit, which happens about every 3 weeks on this project, that we throw everything down and get so frustrated. Because it seems like the woods and everything want to fight against you. It's almost like there's a trickster element to the whole thing. And then when you're driven to that point of madness where you want to throw everything in the river, it gives you just a little bit of hope. So it's been doing that to us for years. We were about to quit one time, and we found this giant footprint that was perfect, beautiful, beautiful, perfect. And we were like, I guess we got to keep going. And then that night, like right after, we just see green lights floating in the woods, all throughout the woods, green and blue lights. It was very strange. But that's a commonality with a lot of Bigfoot sightings in this region.
So do you believe then that, you know, have you tracked, like when you get two beautiful big footprints, do you ever match them to see if it's the same creature?
Well, you can do that by measuring them. You know, we don't cast footprints. I think we attempted to cast footprints once or twice. Not great at casting footprints. And the distances that we travel to go into these wilderness areas, the distances we travel, we're not carrying extra water for casting footprints, and we're not carrying casting material. And I think at this point, there's enough footprint casts out there. There's thousands of footprint casts at this point. You can go to any paranormal or cryptid convention, and there's going to be a guy there with 50 giant cast footprints. So I think they've got that pretty well covered. My goal is just to get video evidence of something, or to get solid audio evidence of something. That's going to be the deciding factor. I don't think that these casts are moving the needle at all at this point. They're interesting. It's a great curiosity. It's cool to see. You can have a tactile thing there in your hand that represents Bigfoot, you know. But I put all of my resources, my time and my effort into hopefully acquiring the footage that shows that these things are real.
But Jesse, the footage, we are living in an era now when any schmo with a computer and $150 can get a software that really makes compelling video footage and make it look real.
That's why what's important is you need to look at the context of these things, the video before, the video after. That's why we film everything. We film everything we do. So if we ever get that video of a Sasquatch, we actually get it, and it's that smoking gun, you're going to have the video before, the video after, the video during, everything. You'll have multiple cameras on it. You just have to, go to those links because of the availability of AI right now to perpetrate hoaxes. It's too easy for somebody to do that. And also look at your source. We've been doing this for years. We've built a reputation of being honest with what we do. We are not people who jump to conclusions. We work very hard at what we do, and we take, like I said before, the slings and arrows of doing this in an honest way and not jumping to conclusions or jumping to a certain narrative. And so when you have that attitude, you can become a target for the Bigfoot world, but for the people who are interested in the evidence, you're a shining beacon in the darkness because you're somebody who looks at things critically and you're actually doing something to get that real hardcore evidence.
Do you feel you were being stalked by that thing, or was it coming closer and closer with it circling?
We have a couple of theories about what was going on with that. We went out there over the course of a few months, and every time we would go out there during the middle of the week, about it was because the Uwari is actually a popular place during the weekends, but there's nobody there during the middle of the week. So we would go out there for a few days in the middle of the week, and that's when we were able to actually get good audio. But we noticed a weird pattern of when we were there, something would move in close and then move off very quickly. And this happened over and over again. So I don't know. I can't jump to conclusions as usual, but you have to kind of wonder if me being a woman was a factor in that.
So check it out for yourself. Watch the documentary, see the footage, hear the stories, be a part of the experience. Because the forests of the Uwaris have always held secrets. But after tonight, they feel a little darker. Maybe even a little closer. Jesse Doyle brought us deep into the shadowy hills of Morris Mountain, where legends are more than stories, and something powerful does roam. What the monster on Morris Mountain shows us is that cryptid research isn't just chasing footprints. It's walking into fear with eyes open, trusting your instincts, and hoping the woods let you leave. Bigfoot may not want to be found, but he sure knows how to find you. So keep your gear packed and your senses sharp, because in the world of high strangeness, the next encounter is always closer than you think. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Dave Schrader, and thank you for being a part of the Paranormal 360.